This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Senate Education Committee will come to order. Good morning. Welcome, everyone. Reminder, make sure you turn off your cell phones or any electronic equipment. Secretary, may I call the roll, please?
Senator Gray?
Here.
Gersten? Here. Nesselhoff? Olson? Peterson? Here. Knudsen?
Here. We have a quorum with the majority of the members elect present. The chair will entertain a motion for approval minutes.
Second.
It has been moved by Senator Gray, seconded by Senator Knudsen. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The minutes are approved. Once again, make sure if you testify, please sign in. If you have any handouts, the pages will help you with them. When you do sign in, and if you are going to testify, make sure you identify yourself and who you are representing. And also a reminder that all questions must go through the chair, please. That would be greatly appreciated. First up on the list, number one, I'll go through the agenda. We will start with the confirmation of Phyllis Heineman, and then we'll go to Senate Bill 140, then we'll go to Senate Bill 190, and then we're going to drop below the line today, and we will do Senate Bill 106. But Senate Bills 126 and Senate Bill 189, we plan to do those next Tuesday. And the reason being, we are working to try to get things ironed out and also amendments, and I think there's a couple people that are possibly gone today that we're going to testify and work on those. So once again, Senate Bill 126 and Senate Bill 189, we'll do that next Tuesday. If there is anyone here that will not be here next Tuesday, we will, of course, open it up and let you have your say today if you want that. So that now brings us to the confirmation of Phyllis Heineman to the South Dakota Board of Education. Good morning, Secretary Oster.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Phyllis Heineman was not able to be here this morning, so I'm here on her behalf. Phyllis Heineman is from Sioux Falls, and she's a former legislator, and I served on the education task force with her, the last one, and I know she's very passionate about education, and I'm certain she'll be a good board member. I'd be glad to take any questions if you had.
Thank you, Secretary Oster. Are there any questions from the committee? Any questions? Senator Gerstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if you had had a chance to work with Ms. Heineman.
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead.
Yes, I have served on the education task force with her. That task force ran about 18 months, and we had several meetings. And again, very passionate about education. And of course, I spent some time testifying in front of Education Committee when she served there as well. So that would be the instance that I know her from.
Okay. Any further questions of the committee? Any further questions? Thank you, Secretary Oster. The chair closes the public hearing on the confirmation of Phyllis Heineman to the South Dakota Board of Education. Are there any comments from the committee? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to vote no. And this is the very first time that I've ever voted no on any appointment. But I just cannot, with good conscience, vote for this appointment.
Thank you. Senator Nesselhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will also be voting no today. But I think it's important to note exactly why. I've served with Phyllis Heineman for four terms. I find her to be a very engaging, warm, friendly person. This is not a political vote by any means or a personal vote. But rather, I have for so long so intensely disagreed with so many issues on education that I cannot vote today to give her a seat at the table when those issues are discussed. I thought long and hard about this and really could not come up with one substantive education issue that we agreed on. And so I will be voting no, but I just want to make sure that's very clear. This is in no way a vote against Phyllis as a person. Again, I find her to be very engaging, very, very nice. But I want to make sure that's very, very clear.
Thank you. Senator Gerstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know Phyllis somewhat anyway, and she's a very, very nice person, very sweet and lovely person. And my reasons are identical to Senator Nesselhoff's of why I'll be voting no, and I think that's important to note. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Senator Gray.
Well, I will be voting for her. You would think, frankly, that we were confirming the Secretary of Education today. We are not. We're confirming a board member to the Board of Education. The Board of Education has some advisory, I think, influence, but she's one of many. She's not the Secretary of Education. So I think we can take this to an extreme as well. I certainly haven't agreed with her on all issues either. Probably none of us have. But I can't look at anybody on this committee that I've agreed with every issue on. So I think we're maybe overreacting a little bit, and I think we ought to defer to the governor's choice on this like we do so many other picks. And so I will be supporting her today. Thank you.
Any further comment from the committee? Senator Nesloff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do need to respond to my friend, Senator Gray. It's not that I have disagreed with her or that I haven't agreed with her on everything. It's that I have had very strong disagreements with her on almost everything when it involves education. If this was a tourism board, I'd have no problem saying absolutely. But given this particular issue, I think it is important that we look at the history of the candidate. The other thing I will point out is that we do serve in an advise and consent role as the Senate. I take that seriously, especially the consent portion of that. And I think when we vote for these nominees, we are saying that we approve of their positions, we approve of the job they're doing, and in this case, that's just not true.
Senator Olson.
This is my first time serving on education in any form, whether it be the House or now in the Senate, and I've never had to appear before Phyllis as a chairman of education or on any other bills that had to do with education before now. But I do know that I'm going to support her because anytime I ask for information, whether it was contrary to her opinion or not, she would go the extra mile to get me that data. And there's quite a few, especially so when I was fighting for a lot of my small schools, that she could have probably said, I just don't have time to get you that information, Russ. And she would go the extra mile to get me that information. So I think that as a board, it isn't always good to have a rubber stamp. And I think that she'll have great input to the board. And I would urge the rest of the committee to advise and consent.
Senator Knutson.
Yes. First, I think it's probably unfortunate that the former Representative Heineman wasn't here. I think one could have reasonably anticipated that this was going to attract some controversy, but I think that, and some of the folks on my left here, I've seldom agreed with Representative Heineman on educational issues, as we've had for 4 years or so sharp differences between the Senate's view of education funding and the House of Representatives' view. But I think there's no question about her passion to be involved in education issues. She and I do agree on the desirability of increasing rigor in our public and private schools. I think that she's highly critical, in my view, of the delivery systems that we use in public education. That's a criticism that I don't share, but I think it's one that is broadly shared by the governor and the Department of Education, and I think that we do need to respect the governor's ability to select people whose views are parallel to his, so I'm going to be supporting the nomination as well.
Senator Gray.
I would move at this time that we advise and consent to the confirmation of Phyllis Heineman to the South Dakota Board of Education.
There's been a motion by Senator Gray, and this is a little bit different on the confirmation, is advise and consent. So that's the question before us. It has been seconded by Senator Knutson. Is there any comment on that? Any comment? I'll just throw my two cents in. I've known Phyllis a long time. I know her background. She, Bridgewater, South Dakota, she began teaching in the public school system early in her career before she was a homemaker. And I think, I just even reflect on the national level what President Obama has done with his cabinet. He's put three Republicans in there. So, I certainly look at, I know we all don't agree with, you know, a lot of things that we all do, and also myself just looking at in terms of Phyllis Heinemann and some of her positions, but I think it's important to have someone on that board that may, you know, bring a little different angle. So that's, you know, one of the reasons that I'll vote for her today. So once again, we do have the motion before us is to advise and consent for the confirmation of Phyllis Heinemann to the South Dakota Board of Education. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The Secretary call the roll.
Senator Gray?
Aye.
Dristed?
No.
Nesselhoff?
No.
Olson?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Knudsen?
Aye.
Aye. Phyllis Heinemann from the Senate Education Committee is confirmed, and that will go down to the floor. And once again, that advice and consent of the executive appointment of Governor Rounds. That moves us to Senate Bill 140. And this is an act to allow school districts to enter into contractual agreements to provide for the whole grade sharing of students. Good morning. Welcome, Senator Bartling.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Senator Julie Bartling, District 26, representing Gregory, Tripp, Todd, and Millette counties. It's a pleasure to be here before you today. Mr. Chairman, I do have an amendment that I would like to pass out and ask if you might act on, at least for discussion during the presentation of the bill.
Yes, would
that
thank
be permissible?
You. If you want to help us.
Thank you.
Of course, we have the flexibility if you want to speak to the amendment and to the bill. And committee,
thank
if you.
You
want to do the amendment right away, we certainly may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That's what Senator Bartling desires. You bet. Maybe you could walk us through the amendment on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, the amendment, if you turn to page 2 of the printed bill on line 3, it is striking everything on the language after the word return through line 7. In reading through the language of the bill and some discussions, I think the language that is in the bill as it is right now is a little bit more contradictive to what the intent of the legislation is. And so would be my wish that we could at least strike that from the bill at this point in time and then take the bill from that. But I will go through the bill with the assumption that that amendment would pass, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
And the concept that I bring before you today is called whole grade sharing. It's a concept that two or more school districts might enter into agreement where they would actually share whole grades of students. It's achieved through an agreement where one school would make an agreement with a neighboring school or neighboring schools to where they could send whole grades and in anticipation of if they've got some small grades or small numbers in grades, they could send those grades on to a neighboring school for a good educational experience. However, as you can see in the bill, before any of this could happen, each school district must offer the instructional program as required by statute, which is K through 12, so a 13-year curriculum, and they must meet the minimum fall enrollment. Therefore, if they are at 100 or less, they cannot do this. This does not in any way affect the bill that we passed a year or so ago on the minimum enrollment size. So, and the Secretary of Education must, in my opinion, approve these types of contractual agreements. In the bill, it also states that the agreement must remain in effect for 3 years. The three-year period is so that it gives an opportunity for the sharing program to work, because if you just try it for 1 year, you're not going to really get the full effect as to how sharing these grades are going to work. However, if one or more participating school districts finds that it's just not going to be a feasible solution or a feasible program, they can give their notice to terminate the agreement, but it must be at least 18 months out from the end of the date of that termination date, simply again to fulfill the work of the setting their budgets and things of that nature. In a whole grade sharing agreement, each school board must agree to the terms of the agreement, which grades will be shared. In the bill, I've defined that there's a one-way sharing and that there is two-way sharing. In one-way sharing, it would be a participating school district would send the selected grades to another school district. In a two-way sharing, they would share back and forth. One would share and the other would also share. There might be situations out there that For example, a larger school district with a smaller school district near its boundaries might have the opportunity to share, and that smaller school district may want to send their middle school, for example, 7, 8, 9, just simply because the enrollment is small and the opportunity would be much greater at that larger school district. However, that larger school district would not most likely send grades back to that smaller district. So there is where one-way sharing might work. In the two-way sharing, of course, then there's the agreement made that perhaps middle school would go one way and a portion of your high school another way, et cetera. So in the bill, we've also set out some criteria that the boards must meet. The rate of tuition must be the per-student allocation. They cannot negotiate what a tuition rate might be for one district sending students to another district. The enrollment figures stay with the participating school districts. There's no shift in numbers from one district to the next because we don't want to distort those figures. Average yearly progress and graduation rates would remain with the receiving district because they are the district that is going to be doing the instruction. And for purposes of special education, which is a very difficult subject anyway, the special ed students are paid for by the sending district. But yet both school districts do work together to establish the instructional education piece for that special ed student because you certainly want both districts involved in that. And then, of course, Department of Education needs to have rulemaking authority to help govern what these contracts will entail and how they might work. And I guess the thought process is why would we want to have some whole grade sharing agreements? In my opinion, it's another tool that schools will be able to use to offer a well-rounded education to youngsters in this state. And it's an opportunity, and I think probably the first step for schools who are probably nearing that very difficult decision that they may need to begin thinking about consolidation, whether their enrollment numbers are getting to a critical point in their opinion that they know that this is on the horizon for them, and then they can see the stars are aligning or the tea leaves are just right now, and it's an opportunity for them to ease into that painful sometimes painful process of consolidation. And so I think it's just another opportunity for schools to, as I say, continue to offer a really good education for our young people while working and trying to eventually achieve that goal, that next step into consolidation without some tough difficulty. I do firmly believe that there will be some cost savings, some financial savings to these school districts because your overall budgetary costs are going to be changing when you're not having as many faculty on staff. Perhaps you'll go into some agreements of sharing administration throughout this as well. But I'm going to leave that to some others who will testify as to what they believe their cost savings might be. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I hope that the amendment is approvable to the board. I do believe the language that I've asked you to strike, it's in conflict with the term of sharing. It just seems like it's more of a lends itself to more of a consolidation piece, and I want it to be clearly that it is a sharing piece. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand back. I will certainly be available for questions, and thank you for your opportunity to visit with you today.
Thank you, Senator Bartling. And we will hold the amendment until we get through with the proponent opponent testimony and questions from the committee. So next up, any further proponents of Senate Bill 140? Any further proponents? Any further proponents of Senate Bill 140? Good morning.
My name is Jack Broom. I'm superintendent of schools at Burke and Bonestell Fairfax. I'm here because Senator Bartling was my babysitter, and she said I didn't pay her enough, and I have to. That's true.
Mr. Broom, she looks much younger than you.
Yes, she is. Much younger.
Okay, the secret's out now. No, welcome. Good morning.
Thank you. I'm here to support the bill. We in Burke have been through several reorganization efforts. One was kind of a forced reorganization attempt with the Gregory School District as a result of a petition, and I spent a lot of time dealing with that, and it was probably not destined. It obviously did not work. I think it went down 89% to 11% in Burke and barely passed in Gregory. On the other hand, we have been involved with Bonestell Fairfax for a number of years. We have forged a very good relationship. Currently, we're sharing 10 teachers with Bonestell Fairfax, including myself as superintendent. I spend a half a day in Bonestell every day, a half a day in Burke. When I go down on the A day, I take along a science teacher and the physical education teacher. I meet a math teacher coming from Bonestell. On the B day, we have a math teacher coming from Bonestell to Burke. We send another science teacher down to Bonestell. We share music. We share shop. At the co-op level, when I leave here, I'm going to Mid-Central Co-op. We have 13 schools that share all of our auxiliary services, ed psych, speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, drug and alcohol, the whole gamut. We do distance learning through Dial. That's a shared, when we take these courses, we're sharing. We do distance learning with Bonestell Fairfax. Obviously, I've talked about the school-to-school sharing. I know that in the Watertown area, they do multi-district sharing with a vocational. It just seems like we're sharing at every level, but we're barred from sharing at the elementary level. We went through consolidation or reorganization talks with Bonestell Fairfax, and those are very difficult. Probably the most difficult thing is where you put facilities, and it was very disappointing to us that we had ironed all of that out, done everything, figured out what we were going to do, and then we started doing the financials. And when we put the financials together, we knew it wouldn't cash flow without an opt-out. Because Bonestell Fairfax is heavily impacted, in other words, they have a plus 40% Native American population, they receive about $1 million in impact aid. Well, when you put the two demographics of the district together, it blows our demographics out of the water. Bonestell Fairfax, or the new district, actually South Central, stood to lose about $1 million. So it really kind of stopped our reorganization. But we continue to share. Like I said, when I leave here, I will go to Platt to a Mid-Central meeting, and then I will go to the Bonestell district and finish in Burke. I mean, we have teachers going back and forth. We just view that this is just another step that allow us to do more sharing until we get to reorganization, but we just think it's the logical step. We would really like to share some elementary classes, but right now we're barred, and we think this bill would allow us to do that, and it would just, again, bring us closer together. So with that, I would ask for your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Superintendent Broom. Any further proponents to Senate Bill 140? Any further proponents? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Wayne Leaders. I'm executive director with the Associated School Boards, and we are a supporter of Senate Bill 140. We have been working on this bill for over a year. About a year ago, we brought a similar bill, very abbreviated. Concept was not understood. It died right here in this committee, and appropriately so at the time. We have worked with the department, we've worked with local school districts to modify that to bring more clarity into what we are hoping and anticipating to move forward. This bill really focuses on students. It's not about economics comes into it, but what we're focusing on is trying to establish learning opportunities for individual students. And by encouraging school districts to work together, encouraging school boards, it provides a framework for the two school districts to enter into an initial contract, but there are many things in here that are going to be ongoing that the two school boards will be operating and will be making contact and will be working on the governance aspect of that as they go forward. This is one of our three primary priorities with the Associated School Boards. for legislation this year. We believe very strongly in providing tools for local school districts to have flexibility in maintaining local governance control. This really does give a voluntary cooperation at the local district level on a temporary basis, and perhaps on a long-term basis to provide two school districts or maybe more school districts to come together. It does set the tuition rate, so that is not an issue. It's not going to be seen as a tax haven, as some individuals might have considered some of the other proposals as we were talking about. And this does not cost the state any funds. It's already established how the students are going to be counted. There's no sending receiving costs, and special education has been addressed in this. So we see it as a win-win for local school districts, an opportunity to start coming together, and hopefully in the long term it'll give them a voluntary choice on possible reorganization with each other. So with that, I strongly encourage support for this bill.
Thank you. Thank you. Further proponents of Senate Bill 140. Further proponents. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Wade Pogany from Department of Education. After you get over the shock of wondering how the department can support a bill, we do have that opportunity today because this is a good idea. It's written well, and I'll share with you that I've had two conversations in the past year with some superintendents that asked the question, we realize that we can increase our opportunities at the high school level if a neighbor could open and enroll their students to our high school. And the answer that I have to give them is that we can't do that because the law currently says you have to maintain a K-12 system. And so all the kids from District A couldn't open and enroll in District B and still maintain a K-12 system. Well, this bill, I think, answers that question. And the reason that it's very advantageous, especially at the high school level, is that the more critical mass you get at a high school level, the more opportunities you can offer kids. Chairman Garner, as you know, that sometimes you have these number problems with numbers of students, and how many courses or electives you can offer really is dictated by the number of students you have. And so the superintendents were frustrated because, you know, they recognize that if you have that critical mass, you have more opportunities. I think the analogy is a fairly good one in terms of athletics. If two schools don't have enough folks to field a football team, but you get them together, you have more numbers of people, more opportunities for kids, you can play together and do that. Well, I think academically it's a very similar analogy. And so we're in support of this because we think it's really a very good opportunity for students to do. I also can tell you that this is not just a Burke and Bonesville Fairfax issue. There are other school districts that are in various stages of reorganization talks. The two I mentioned, one of them hadn't even started any discussions with a dancing partner somewhere else, but they wanted to explore this concept. The other one is well on their way to future reorganization, but they even see it, you know, 3 or 4 years down the road in doing this. But they recognize that high school need, and so they wanted to do something like this. As Senator Barling said, it's also a great way to maximize resources, because if you begin, and I'm using the high school analogy, you can share any grade, but there is a way that you can really maximize resources. So I think if you can maximize resources, ease into reorganization, help kids and have a positive impact on students, especially high school, it's a good idea. We'd urge you to consider it.
Thank you. Further proponents of Senate Bill 140. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Representative Jason Frerix from Wilmot up in the Northeast, representing Day, Marshall, and Roberts counties. We're very excited about Senate Bill 140 up in the Northeast. We have a considerable amount of communities that are at that size where there can be some opportunities for some grade sharing, still maintaining the minimum requirements to keep the school district. So we're very excited about this. And not only that, with the amount of federal impact aid money that comes into some of the school districts in our area, let's try to find some ways that we can encourage those federal funds to keep coming to the school districts instead of diluting those funds and not allowing those to keep flowing into our communities that are right here in South Dakota. So I strongly encourage your support, and I hope that you'll be able to send it on its way, and we'd look forward to having it over on the House side if everything looks good. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Friedrichs. Good to have you over here. Further proponents of Senate Bill 140. Morning.
Morning, members of the committee. Jim Huntmaker, registered lobbyist for mid-sized schools and South Dakota Coalition of Schools. I have not really anything that I can add to what the excellent testimony has been, other than we are a Me Too supporter, and it's great to be on the same side as the department.
Thank you. Any further proponents of 140? Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Garnos and committee members. My name is John Peterson. I'm the Executive Director for School Administrators of South Dakota, and we certainly support this bill. It just gives schools another option, I think, to be more efficient and also to provide the students a better education. So it's another option for us, so we urge you to support it.
Thank you. Any further proponents? Any further proponents? Are there any opponents to Senate Bill 140? Any opponents? Any questions from the committee proponents? Senator Gray.
Mr. Chairman, Wade Pogany maybe would be the best.
Good morning.
Morning, Wade. My question is this. Using an example, just Pierre Fort Pierre, for instance, if Fort Pierre decided we're going to send 9 through 12 to Pierre, in terms of calculation or in terms of the enrollment and calculating state aid, any of those students who still went to Pierre would be counted as Fort Pierre students. Is that correct under this plan?
Senator, if I understand your question correctly, the Stanley County students would whole grade share into the Pierre School District?
Right.
Okay. And for their purposes, and state aid purposes, they would still be counted for the Stanley County. But that money then would now be counted over into the Pierre School District because the state aid, the personal allocation would still remain the same. So there isn't any kind of negotiation of dollars back and forth. The students would still have that personal allocation follow them.
Okay, that's what I was getting at. The personal allocation would essentially follow the student.
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Committee, further questions? Are there any further questions from the committee at the time? Superintendent Broom, real quickly, if I could have you come up. You know, under the scenario which would happen down in the district, Burke, South Central, Bonesteel, Fairfax, you know, currently, for example, there'd be second graders, six kids over in Burke, and there'd be six over in Bonesteel where they would combine for the whole grade, and you'd obviously have one teacher instead of two.
Exactly.
And then another question for you. I mean, in terms of physical location, you guys are approximately 8 miles away from Gregory. I mean, do you foresee maybe something there someday, or is it just
determined
numbers?
I think down the pipe when that happens, yes.
Okay.
It's just has worked out so good between the two districts. And yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Any further questions from the committee at the time? Senator Bartling, did you want to add anything at the end here? Very shortly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Once again, Julie Bartling, Senator, District 26. I really do appreciate the proponents behind me. This has been a work in progress, and it's been a kind of a joint effort from a number of people. In visiting, a lot of people have said that I come from a district that's relatively equated to the Land of Oz. When you talk about Bonesteel and Burke, Bonesteel, Fairfax, and Burke, because those two school districts and those communities have worked very well together. And so, in lightly thinking, if I'm coming from the Land of Oz, then it made awful good sense for me to go to the great and powerful Oster for help. And so I did. And I want to thank him for that. And I told Mr. Pogany I don't care if he's little Toto or the little monkeys or whatever in the situation, but I appreciate his help as well, too. So, but with that, I appreciate your consideration of this. I do think this is a wonderful opportunity for students, as is, has been stated. Yes, there are some financial benefits, but we all have the realization that consolidation is not going to go away. It is out there for our students, but let's make that transition a little smoother, a little easier, and continue to offer those educational opportunities. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Thank you, Senator Bartling. Before I gavel this and close it to public hearing, we do have an amendment before us. Do we want to put that on at this current time? Okay, it has been moved by Senator Durstad, seconded by Senator Peterson, and again, the amendment is 140cc. If you look on page 2 of the printed bill, it would basically, after the word return in line 3, delete everything through line 7. Okay? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The bill has been amended, and that moves us to the point that the chair has closed the public hearing on Senate Bill 140. It is now open for committee discussion and or action. Senator Olson, then I'll come back to Senator Jersdale.
If you can hear my voice over the background music with all the kumbaya that's going on, I would just like to say that I think that it's important that we recognize Senator Bartling's efforts on this. And Representative Ferrix, everybody that testified stated that the kids' needs are first. And I think that when we start to think out of the box and put the kids first and not worry so much about the dollars, I do appreciate the dollars following the students. We've had other instances with Alt-Ed and some other ones where the money didn't follow the students. And so I think this is a good piece of legislation. I'm going to urge you to support it.
Senator Jersted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I also would like to commend Senator Bartling for bringing from that distinctive land of Oz that you come from a very creative and positive solution that's going to be for the betterment of students, and also for the, you know, to cushion, as you say, when schools have to start consolidating. What a wonderful prelude for that experience that's going to be happening. I just think it's ingenious the way you wove everything together, and it's just a pleasure to see a bill like this come forward. So I want to commend you for doing that.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a tremendous bill, not only from the fact that it makes it easier to consolidate when you have students who go to school together and become friends, and the families become friends, but also from the fact of we're not diluting the federal impact aid that comes to some of our districts. And we do have that occur in more districts than some of us realize in some of our small districts. And that's important to keep that money coming, too. So I hope that we can pass this bill.
Any further discussion, committee? Is there any act for motion here? Senator Knutson?
Move to pass.
Second.
It has been moved by Senator Knutson, do pass by Senator Jerstad. Any discussion on that? Seeing no discussion, the bill again has been amended, and the motion before us is do pass, Senate Bill 140. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gray?
Aye.
Jerstad?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Knutson?
Aye.
Carnos?
Aye. Having received a majority vote of the members elect, Senate Bill 140 passes. Good job, Senator Bartling. Very good work. Okay, it has been moved by Senator Olson, seconded by Senator Jerstad to move to the consent calendar. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. It has been moved to the consent calendar. Okay, moving on here. Thank you very much. Senate Bill 190. Senate Bill 190, this is an act to revise certain allocations for disabilities in the state aid for special education formula. Good morning, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tammy Darnell with the Department of Education, and I hope after my testimony that you'll move this bill to the consent calendar too, as it is. As you know, this year has been a very, very difficult year in putting together the budget and coming up with a balanced budget. And some very, very difficult cuts to the budget were made, or cuts or increases not given. One of those was the fact that we have decided to move the increase in the disability level funding for state to special education from a 3% to a 0% increase. By doing this, we were able to remove about $1.6 million from the governor's recommended budget. I promise you this decision did not come easy, and a lot of thought went into this. However, as we did this, a couple of issues made it a little bit easier to do this. One of these things is that the school districts do have the extraordinary cost fund that they can come to. So if a child does end up costing the district more than what they are receiving in state aid, they do have the strategy. They can come to the state, apply to the extraordinary cost fund, and receive funding to help fund those high-cost children. The other thing is that every 3 years, by statute, in 1337.35.2, the Department of Education is required to look at the disability level for the for all the disabled students, and we're supposed to rebase it, for lack of a better word, look at what the costs have been and see if what we're paying is in line with what the costs are for those students. So we will go in and we will rebase in two more years. The last time it was done was last year. And another thing, recently, in watching all the stimulus package go through and the discussions that have gone on with the new administration in Washington, it does sound like there will be more special education IDEA dollars coming from the federal government. So that will also help in the cost of these students. So with those three things in mind, I hope that you'll support this bill. This is just a one-year holding of the disability level payments. It will hopefully help us get through the budget this year. It will also still allow school districts to have a mechanism to recover the cost if they do have high-need students. I'll stand by for any questions, and please support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further proponents of Senate Bill 190. Further proponents of Senate Bill 190. Further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 190? Are there any opponents to Senate Bill 190? Tammy, did you want to add anything else? Okay, thank you. Are there any questions from the Committee of Proponents or Opponents? Senator Knutson.
Question for Tammy.
Yes.
Tammy, the index factor for the regular state aid program and for special ed is identical. Is that right?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Currently it is, yes.
And this year the governor's office is recommending doing the 3% increase in the regular state aid, but zero in special ed.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Can you recall, I know in the past we have, in fact, made slight adjustments to the state aid formula, as you talked about before, where we've deviated somewhat, never, I don't believe greatly, but deviated some from the what the index factor would be on the regular K-12 funding formula. In those years, I can't remember, did we make a similar adjustment typically in special ed, or did we just use the regular formula? I don't remember.
Mr. Chair, typically with special education, we have just stuck with the regular formula. We haven't adjusted it.
Okay. Senator Gerstead.
Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning.
My thought process always kind of goes to why, and what is the rationale? You don't want to get the reasoning behind doing something that's never been done before. In addition to there have to be cuts made, I don't want to hear that argument, but just why special ed?
Well, again, as I stated earlier, we looked at this and we realized that the school districts still would have a remedy, a way to pay for these children. If their cost ended up being more than what they're receiving through the formula, they can come to the extraordinary cost fund. Also, as I stated, the disability level, the funding for disability level, is rebased every 3 years. So if this 1 year of holding it does end up bringing the reimbursement down below what the typical cost is for that disability level, we will rebase in 2 years. We do look at that. And then finally, as I said, we are expecting more money to come from IDEA to help with these special education students.
Yes, Senator Jerry.
Can you walk me through a little bit about, you know, let's say that at my school, the special ed has gone over what the allotment is. Mm-hmm. What is the process then? Do I come to state and do the payments come that year? I understand that rebates wouldn't be until a couple years after that, which I think would be very difficult if the budget is this year and we don't get any help until 2 years from now. I think that would be a problem. And what kind of help are you expecting from the stimulus package or hoping for, and what is the impact on that?
Okay, I'm going to try to remember all of your questions. I'm sorry, that was, Mr. Chair, do you mind? Okay. Okay, first of all, the Extraordinary Cost Fund. School districts can make application to that fund in January and in the end of May or June of each year, and all they need to fill out a very simple form. It's on our website. They come, they submit the form. We look at what their fund balance is in special education. We look at what their need is. We have an extraordinary cost fund board that comes, and they review the applications, and then they will approve or disapprove whether the payment can be made. very, very rarely do we disapprove one. Sometimes in the first half we'll disapprove if it's a very small amount. We'll say, you know, just come back at the second half so that we can just make one payment for it. Other reasons, like I said, that they've been disapproved is just because their special ed fund balance is too high or they might not be living at the max. But the school districts can come to our extraordinary cost fund, and if they have a high cost need, if they can show that they have extra cost, they do get reimbursed from that fund. Your second question, if I remember, was the money from the federal government. I don't have the dollar amount right offhand, but if you go look at the stimulus package, there is money in the stimulus package coming through for IDEA. Obama has stated that he plans to get IDEA up to the level that the federal government had promised when they first put it in place. It's been underfunded for years, so those are going to bring many more special ed dollars. I don't have a dollar amount. I can't give you the fiscal impact right now, but there are going to be more special ed dollars flowing to the district. I'd also like to add that these special ed students are probably the most protected populations that we have. The student or the parents have rights to make sure that they're getting the services they think their children deserve. Like I said, IDEA, the extraordinary cost from the school district, these are about our most protected population we have.
One last question. Yes.
Have you heard from school districts, and what is the position of the Department of Education on this?
I'm sorry, or Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, on what?
Oh, on this bill, on the
We're
cut.
We're part of it. I'm here supporting it. I'm the one that brought it forward. We're
okay,
in support of
okay.
It.
But what about, have you heard from school districts? Has there been any feedback? I'm surprised that there's nobody here speaking in opposition.
Well, again, the school districts realize that they do have a remedy if the costs go over more than what they get paid out through the formula. They can come to the extraordinary cost fund that has been there for them, and they can do it, and they do.
Senator Olson.
While you're there, how much money is in the extraordinary cost fund?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Each year it varies. This year we have about $4 million, 4.3 I think it is, that we anticipate being used for that. And that's why we have that allowance that we can carry over 5.75% or whatever's left over up to 5.75% in our state aid special education formula each year is to use those for extraordinary costs.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The federal stimulus money, help me to trace how that's going to be allocated. Will that go, that'll follow the student, that'll go to the school?
Mr. Chair, it will flow through the exact same mechanism that our current IDEA funds go through. It's just more money on top of that.
All right.
Tammy, the extraordinary cost fund, you mentioned there's $4.3 million in it. And how many schools participate in that? Is there a rough average? Has that gone up? I mean, is there more pressure on that? Is that actually balance going to go down, especially if we leave this at where it was proposed?
Mr. Chair, it really varies from year to year. I can't really give you an average. We had 1 year where it went up over 14%. We had 1 year where it went down about 3%. It's all over the board. It really depends. I mean, the district can anticipate if they have a child with multiple disabilities move in, or if they have to send one to Sioux Falls or out of state for placement. It's all over the board.
Okay. Thank you. I'm Senator Knutson.
Thank you. Tammy, I have talked with you about the possibility of me moving to amend Senate Bill 190 to change the index factor set forth in 190, which is our 3% or inflation, whichever is less, to conform with the index factor in 106.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked with the committee about that when we were in the committee discussion, but I thought it would only be fair to give you an opportunity to comment on your reaction to putting the 106 index factor into this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. Thank you for that opportunity, Senator Knutson. I really feel, I know that when this was set up right now, if you look in current statute, they do mirror each other. I do think that you have, special education is a totally separate beast because we do have these fallbacks in place. We do have the ability for the school districts to come forward and be reimbursed for additional costs that they do have. There is the extra money coming from USDOE. I really feel strongly that this is an amendment that you probably don't want on special education. I know I discussed that before. Another thing, I had thought about this a lot last night, is like I said, special education is a totally different beast. We do have a maintenance of effort in federal statute. So whatever, we cannot go below our level of funding for special ed in any year. So I'm just going to throw forward a scenario. If we go with your package and if it ends up increasing by 4, 4.5, 5% a year or something like that when revenues come back, and then we go some year and we go to rebase it, and it ends up that the actual cost for that ends up being less for the disability levels than what we've inflated it up to, we can't cut back because we have that maintenance of effort. And then the school districts, I mean, there's only certain things they can spend special education dollars on. That's a very captive pot of money. They will just end up growing their fund balance in special education. So I guess even though they mirror each other in statute right now, I think that was just for convenience of writing. I don't think it belongs on the special education one at all.
Senator Peterson.
I don't know if this is fair or not, but would this bill be here if there wasn't federal stimulus money coming?
Mr. Chair? I'm sorry, would this be here if there wasn't federal stimulus money coming?
Yes, if there wasn't.
Yes, it would. I guess I don't know why it wouldn't be if there wasn't federal stimulus money coming. Well, I see where you're going.
Okay.
We'd still have the extraordinary cost fund that the districts could go to. So, yes, it was. This bill was in place before we knew that the federal stimulus dollars were coming.
Any further questions from the committee? Any further questions? Mr. Luters, I have a question for you real quick, if I could, please. You know, I'm just looking for your broad experience here, and I probably could have picked on somebody else too, but in terms of special education, I mean, really briefly, I mean, over the years, how has that evolved? If you look back 20, 30 years, I mean, do we have so many more kids in because of law? And we look at, you know, you go through the laundry list, for lack of a better term, of all the things that can pertain to special ed. Has that list grown longer, obviously, over the years, and obviously has it put more pressure in terms of funding?
Over the time period, I believe there have been more students identified as special education students. From the federal government standpoint, they had made a commitment to provide 40% of the funding, and they have not done so. So most of that requirement falls back on the backs of local school districts to raise funds to meet the needs of special education students or the special funding that the state has put together, but there is a tremendous cost for those individual students, and the numbers of special education students are not decreasing. They continue to increase.
Thank you. You kind of hit on the other question that I asked. You said at one time it was said at the federal level that they wanted to address 40% of it. Where is that percentage right now? Is there a number out there? Or?
I think the IDEA funds are someplace in the 16-17% range, if anybody else has some numbers. It's not even close to the 40%.
Thank you. Any further questions? Any further questions? Tammy, did you want last minute? Did you want a minute, though, for... Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Gerstead.
Tammy.
I should have stayed back there. I just couldn't hear.
I'm looking at this bill and trying to decide, now, is this something, a revision that's going to be changed and this will be going forward? This will be, as I understand it, it's not just a one-year deal. Is that true, or is this a one-year deal, a one-year cut?
Oh, it's not a cut. It's just holding the disability levels at 1 year. If you look further down, it says in each one for the disability level that will then
factor. I'm sorry. I understand that. But, I mean, is this going forward, this is going to keep on going, or is this just the one-year deal?
We're just holding it at the fiscal year 2009 levels. Right. We're just rebasing, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Setting a new base.
Okay.
Any further questions, Tammy? Did you want another minute to this rebut or anything? Or?
I feel bad. I couldn't hear what Mr. Luters was saying, so I'm not sure what I would be rebutting. That's why
To wrap up the bill before I close to public. Just wanting this one to know if you wanted to add anything else. Thank you very much. Chair closes the public hearing on Senate Bill 190. It's open for committee discussion and or action. Senator Knutson.
First, I'd like to distribute this amendment.
Pages, if you could help,
and,
please.
There are some extra copies for people in the audience as well. Again, the history of special ed has been that the index factor in special education has been the same as the index factor in the general K-12 funding bill or formula. And I couldn't remember when I asked Tammy, I mean, it wasn't a trick question, whether when we'd fiddled slightly with the per pupil amount in the general formula, whether we'd fiddled in the special ed, and her recollection was no, which I think is probably right. But I still think there probably is some sense to making these two things correspond. I have been encouraged by the chief of staff not to amend the governor's bill. And it probably would be a little presumptuous. This would be for people in the public if they want out there, if they want a copy. So I don't think I'm going to offer this today. And also, since 106 is below this bill, perhaps be a little presumptuous to think that to put this into this bill before we deal with 106. I'm going to possibly think about doing this on the floor, but I do, you know, I think Tammy made some reasonable points in this, so I think I am not offering this today, but I did want to put it in front of the committee and out to the interested parties as something that might occur, because I still deep down think the logic is there that the two index factors be the same. The other point I would just make, and this sort of applies to 106 as well, I mean, you see, you know, in the past we've had a fairly close correlation between the increase for state employee salary package, for medical providers, for the K-12 base funding, and for K-12 special ed. You know, in all likelihood, we're going to be 0% for medical providers, 0% for state salary policy, 0%, assuming we adopt this bill, for special ed. I think it's very unrealistic to think we're going to end up at 3% for K-12 base funding. But with that, I would move to pass on Senate Bill 190.
There's been a motion by Senator Knutson, seconded by Senator Gray. Do pass motion on Senate Bill 90. Is there any discussion on that motion? Any discussion on that motion? Seeing no more discussion, the motion before us is do pass on Senate Bill 190. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gray?
Aye.
Jurstedt?
Aye.
Nesselhoff? Olson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 190 has received a majority vote of the members, and it has passed.
Probably not consent.
Next up on the list, we're going to drop below the line, and Senate Bill 106, Senator Knutson, this is an act to revise the index factor in the state aid to general education formula to set a maximum per student allocation for school districts with an excess general fund balance, and to require the legislature to estimate general fund revenues for the current fiscal year and next fiscal year. Just a quick reminder, on Senate Bill 106, we have heard testimony on this. I would open it up again. I mean, hopefully we won't have to repeat a lot of the testimony, but we might want a little refresher. Senator Knutson.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if I could just refresh from here.
Yes.
And I would ask the pages again to distribute an amendment that I will be offering on this bill, and there are some extra copies for the members in the audience. It's a relatively short amendment. Again, 106 changes the index factor that we use in the main K-12 funding formula. The current formula is 3% or inflation, whichever is less. This would change it to 4% or inflation, whichever is greater, with a safety valve that it couldn't grow faster than the state's general fund. Governor Rounds has, for a number of years, been very concerned about entitlements in state government, where the state is mandated to do certain, take certain actions by law, and that with all the demands on the budget, the required entitlements really limit one's ability to manage state government. I think Senate Bill 106 really addresses that concern because instead of mandating the 3% or inflation, whichever is greater, it does have that safety valve that the per pupil amount can't grow faster than the state's general fund revenue. I think that really eases the issue of entitlements and gives makes certain that in years like this, when our state revenues could easily approximate 0% increase, gives us a automatic safety valve to make the adjustments we need to make. Obviously, if we are, in fact, going to be at 0% for state employees and 0% for medical providers, it seems odd that we would be at 3% for K-12 education. So I think this bill fits the current time. I think it really adjusts and lessens the entitlement burden at the same time as giving the schools broader ability to recover when the state's general fund revenue increases. Again, I think if you look over the last 10 years, our general fund revenue has grown in excess of 5% per year. And if we were to come back to that pattern, and certainly in today's uncharted waters, we don't know what the future entails. But if we go back to a 5% increase, this would still leave schools with a shrinking slice of the state's overall budget. And that slice going to K-12 education has diminished from 39% to 31% over the past decade or so, which also has corresponded with a time in which the number of kids in our schools has diminished maybe not 10%, but probably fairly close to that. I mean, we did go down something close to 1% per year for a long time in terms of total number of students. So I think 106 makes sense. The amendment would simply put a floor of 0% on the formula adjustment and a cap of 7%. I think that having some 0% bottom makes sense. I think the cap of 7%, which would be come into play only if we had inflation in excess of 7%, also makes sense and gives comfort to some of the some members that I have talked with. So that's the basically the gist of the bill and the rationale behind it.
Thank you very much. Again, I know we've taken testimony on this, and I want to take some again. I think we do have a little flexibility today because this is the final bill that we will do today, so I would take any more proponents of Senate Bill 106 if you think you want to add something. We do have it recorded that you've been for it, of course, but at this time, are there any further proponents of Senate Bill 106? Okay, how about any opponents? Any opponents? Yep. Okay. I mean, you can come up if you want to restrain, just kind of refresh the audience and refresh us against, you know, what your major arguments are for this. That would be allowed. You bet. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tammy Darnell with the Department of Education. Just a second. I have to dig out my 106 notes here. Okay. Our biggest issues with this are, first of all, the complexity of how this is calculated. Again, right now the index factor, it's on the Bureau of Labor and Statistics website. Anybody can go out there, a school business manager, a superintendent, a teacher, anybody can go out and they can figure out what the index factor, what the floor will be for their funding increase next year. With this, the business managers, nobody would know for sure until the end of session really what the percent increase in the per student allocation would be. The next thing is, as I just stated, the index factor right now is truly a floor, and it gives the legislature the ability to come in each year and look at where everything's at in the budget. Again, state aid's the only thing that's guaranteed an increase. They've already got that increase. And after all the other needs of the state are taken care of, if there are more dollars available, they can then give more dollars to education. Senator Knuth, this amendment changes it to be a maximum of 7%, and it may in no year be less than 0%. Well, to me, that just kind of defeats kind of the argument on this of the schools profiting in the good years and sharing the pain in the bad years. It's a bad year this year. We're probably going to experience a negative growth, but the school districts are, well, they are in the governor's budget held harmless. This bill would hold them harmless also, but it would guarantee it. Again, they would not have to share in the pain. They're held harmless all the time while the school or the state's fundings are decreasing. That's all I have for right now. I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee proponents or opponents at the current time? Senator Knutson?
A couple questions for Tammy.
Sure.
I told you how much I miss you guys when you leave.
You indicated that schools are guaranteed a 3% increase. Wouldn't it be fair to say that special schools were guaranteed a 3% increase in special education as well? And if so, how much is that guarantee worth?
Mr. Chair?
Mm-hmm.
Very good question, sir. And then I guess I could also say, too, with this bill in place, how much is that guarantee worth? We try our very, very best to meet that. If you look back, since Governor Rounds has been in office, he has tried to add more money whenever possible. In addition, the legislature has added more money whenever is possible on top of that. It's a tough year. I think South Dakota is lucky. I've been on conference calls. I look at other states, what's happened to their education funding. The governor and the legislature have tried very, very hard to prioritize education funding and give them as much funds as possible. So I guess the guarantee is only as good as the next legislative session.
Question.
Yeah, further. Tammy, you also said that the governor's budget holds schools harmless, and I didn't notice that it included the continuation of the TCAP program.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I guess I should restate that. In the funding formula, they get the 3% increase. I do realize that some other adjustments were made. The TCAP formula, you know, that's a very new program. We had to go back and look at programs that are very new. I guess the thought was that schools would rather have an increase in discretionary money. And if it's a tough year, are the schools going to be able to come up with the dollars to match the TCAP?
One last question.
Yep,
I mean, when you towed up the loss of TCAP, the loss of ESAs, the loss mm-hmm. of growing and declining enrollment, the loss of sparsity
mm-hmm.
and the shift of $6 million to property taxpayers all in the governor's budget, do you think it's fair to say the state is increasing its commitment to education?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
We are doing the best we can to live within the means that we have. We have to present a balanced budget. Unfortunately, because education is the biggest single spending area, when cuts happen, some of them have to happen there. Anything else?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions from the committee of the proponents or opponents? Senator Knutson, a quick question for you, being the devil's advocate here. When you know, if I can say, if you narrow in and look at education, the funding in terms of this bill, and you don't change the salary policy or medical providers, would be a couple examples there that you don't tie those into a bill like that. I mean, this is your thoughts on that. Why education?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I mean, I think there has been an effort by the administration and by the legislature to look at those three important variables somewhat together. And I think that probably, I personally am not subscribed to that those should be always together. And indeed, I think when you look at the six-year history, we have made these deviations in favor of education. I think they could be properly characterized, that typically have not had a corresponding change in the other two major components, state salary policy and medical providers. There always has been the movement to midpoint in state salary policy that was sort of in on top of the baseline funding, so that state employees, I would argue, always had a little bit better end result than the medical providers or the schools. But I think the fundamental point that Tammy makes, that you have to look at these things in light of where you are, the guarantees are as good as the next legislature, is a fair one. And but these set out roadmaps. We have had the 3% or inflation, whichever is less. We have by and large stuck to that formula, with the deviations being fairly small. I think this year we're again, I think it's more important to keep in place all those ancillary provisions, the TCAPs, the growing and declining enrollment, sparse schools. I would rather spend our money to keep those portions of the programs the same, and recognize that this is a year for 0% increase in the per pupil amount. I think in 2007, when we established these various programs, with the increasing and decreasing, the small school factor arrangement that was made then, the revisions to the sparse school program that were made in 2007, I think all those were delicately balanced. I think the 2007 legislature did a good job, and I would, in this difficult year, I would rather retain all those pieces, not make some schools suffer disproportionately. And then, in fact, in my mind, it's clear as a bell we're going to end up at 0% increase in the per pupil amount this year, and we just as well have a bill that puts that in place. It gives schools greater opportunities for growth when times are good than they have under the current formula.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that, and Senator Gray, I'll ask this question both of Senator Knutson first and of you. I mean, do you guys see fundamental differences, when you send back, let's say 3% to education, it goes back to the schools, and obviously that can be spread anywhere in terms of, does it go into the maintenance of the building? Does it go into teacher salary? Does it go into administrative costs? But on the flip side of that, when the money goes back 3% to state employees, does it just go into salary policy? And do you see a fundamental difference there? And I'd like to ask both of you guys that. And Senator Gray, I mean, obviously, because living in Pierre and the state employees. Senator Knudsen?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think there is a difference in that the schools have extra costs besides labor costs. I think schools spend roughly 80% of their general fund budgets on labor, between teachers and other staff salaries. But they do have that other 20% that is spent on the other operating costs of districts. So to me, when you give the schools a 3% increase, the schools have to cover expenses that are increasing faster than 3% in many years. And so that makes it difficult for them to maintain their increases at that same level on their labor side of their operation.
Senator Gray, is that okay if I ask you the same question? The fundamental,
sure.
If you see a fundamental difference?
Well, I would tell you first that I've never liked the idea that it seems like state employees are the first to be picked on when there's tough budget times up here. Let's cut them to zero, everybody says. And so I've never appreciated that. But I also don't believe that we should evaluate state employees and education and providers and on the same level. I mean, they're providing different services, vastly different areas of expertise, whether it be healthcare or state government work or education. They're just different, and I don't think they should be evaluated the same way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Any further questions from the committee of proponents or opponents? Senator Knudsen, you need a final minute here, rebuttal, or anything to add? The chair closes the public hearing on Senate Bill 106. It is open for committee discussion and or action, and we do have an amendment here, too. It's a 106CA. Do we want to move that right away?
Yep. Mr. Chairman, I would move 106CA.
It has been moved by Senator Knudsen, seconded by Senator Gray. Again, the amendment is 106CA. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The bill has been amended. Again, that's on page 4, line 6 of the bill. Oh, yes. Thank you for coming. Appreciate that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Knutson.
I would move due pass on 106.
There's been a due pass motion on the amendment bill by Senator Knutson. It has been seconded by Senator Gerstad. Any discussion on that? Any discussion on that? Seeing no discussion, once again, there is a due pass motion before us on Senate Bill 106. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Gray?
Aye.
Gerstad?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Knutson?
Aye.
Carnos?
Aye.
Like 190, probably not consent.
Senate Bill 106, having received a majority vote of the members elect, it passes down to the House. That concludes our business for the day. But before we go, committee, is there anyone here that needs to testify on Senate Bill 126 or Senate Bill 189? We will do those next Tuesday, the 17th of February. If not, please leave your binders, and I would take a motion to adjourn. It's been moved by Senator Olson, seconded by Senator Knutson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are adjourned. Thank you very much, committee.